This week on Straight Talk Africa, world leaders are gathered in New York for the United Nations General Assembly, or UNGA.
Our world is ebbing off the rails, and we need tough decisions to get back on track.
Discussions on Africa are high on the agenda. Will Africa manage to get 2 permanent seats at the UN Security Council? Is the United Nations Pact for the Future going to make a difference for Africans? What is the Africa delegation to the UNGA hoping to achieve? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from the VOA Bureau in New York City. I'm your host, Peter Clotty. The United Nations General Assembly brings together over 130 presidents, prime ministers, and monarchs, along with dozens of ministers. The theme this year is Leaving No One Behind, Acting Together for the Advancement of Peace, Sustainable Development, and Humanity Dignity for Present and Future Generations. A pertinent theme in the backdrop of wars raging in Gaza, Ukraine, and Sudan, an escalating humanitarian crisis on multiple fronts. To quote the UN Secretary General, international challenges are moving faster than our ability to solve them. For more on the effort of the international community to grapple with the challenges and address the future, let's go to our VOA United Nations correspondent, Margaret Bashir. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, Peter.
Well, Margaret, what is the latest development with renewed calls by Africa for reforms at the UN Security Council?
Yeah, I think that's turned out to be a big topic here this week, Peter. We had on Sunday and Monday the Summit of the Future that the Secretary General organized, and it had a big document called the Pact for the Future, which has a lot of lofty goals in it. But among them is Security Council reform. And that is something that we've been hearing a lot about really for decades at the United Nations with no action, no movement. Especially countries in the global south want to see themselves better reflected in the council. But the new pact that was agreed by consensus by all 193 nations calls for Security Council reform. It says that we need the council to be more representative, inclusive, transparent, and efficient. And specifically on Africa, it says it must redress the historical injustice against Africa as a priority. And that's important because, you know, when the Security Council and the United Nations were born in 1945, a lot of countries in Africa were still under colonial rule. They didn't have independence yet. So they had no representation. We have on the council today two non-permanent seats for Africa, currently occupied by Mozambique and Sierra Leone. And there's a third seat that sort of encompasses Asia, Pacific, Africa, Middle East, and it's being held right now by Algeria. So they straddle both Africa and the Arab world. So there's a strong representation, but it's non-permanent. So the pact says you need to have at least, you know, a permanent seat for Africa. The United States has said in the last week that they support 2 permanent seats for Africa. But one of the big things is Washington doesn't support a veto. And that's really the big perk of a permanent seat, is that veto. And among the 5, I don't think Russia and China are particularly interested in handing out vetoes to anybody else. I think if you're going to find some traction on the veto, it might be with the French. But it's a big movement. I think this is the first momentum that we've really seen in decades. I mean, the last time the Security Council had any real expansion was in the early 1960s. It moved from 11 members to 15. So I think the Global South will be seizing on this and not letting it go. They will be pushing for that permanent representation from Africa, from Latin America, and from Asia.
Margaret, moving on to the conflict in Sudan, President Biden mentioned the conflict that it must end. There have been concerns about the toll it's taking on Sudanese. But what can you tell us about the push to end this ongoing conflict in Sudan?
Right. So, well, there's really three big topics on the agenda this week: Gaza, Ukraine, and Sudan. And President Biden addressed the situation in Sudan when he spoke in the UN General Assembly on Tuesday. Let's listen to what he said.
In Sudan, a bloody civil war unleashed one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. 8 million on the brink of famine. Hundreds of thousands already there. Atrocities in Darfur and elsewhere. The United States has led the world in providing humanitarian aid to Sudan. And with our partners, we've led diplomatic talks to try to silence the guns and avert a wider famine. The world needs to stop arming the generals, to speak with one voice and tell them, stop tearing your country apart, stop blocking aid to the Sudanese people, end this war now.
So General Burhan, one of the generals that he is referring to there, will be here in New York this week. He is expected to address the General Assembly on Thursday. There are also some meetings around Sudan, some side events. A lot of the action here at the UN this week happens in the margins of the meetings, not necessarily at the podium where we hear the speeches. Today, there's a big meeting on the humanitarian situation in Sudan that the United Nations is co-hosting with several countries, including the United States and Saudi Arabia. The African Union is a part of that. They're going to be pushing to get those pledges that were made in Paris back in April paid up, because not all of that money has come through yet. And as we all know, the situation there is just absolutely catastrophic. And this evening, there is going to be a meeting of ministers from Germany and France, the United States, and some other partners about the political situation in Sudan. You know, there's a lot of concern in this building right now about al-Fashir in North Darfur. The RSF is attacking the city. The SAF, the Sudanese Armed Forces, are inside the city. There are maybe 2 million civilians also inside that city. So there's a lot of concern about Sudan here, and there is a big push to get some traction. They really just want to see a peace process. Secretary General Guterres said last week that he will express his frustration to General Burhan when he meets him this week.
Well, briefly before you go, Margaret, what is the international community doing? Do you think the international community is moving fast enough to end the ongoing outbreak regarding mpox? Because concerns have been raised about it.
Yes, 18,000 cases in the DRC alone. The World Health Organization declared it last month a situation of international concern, basically. And there, the United States, President Biden addressed it yesterday. He said that the U.S. is ready to contribute $500 million to the effort to vaccinate people in Africa, and that the United States is contributing 1 million doses of vaccine. The WHO also has its own strategic plan, a response plan in place. They are moving on it. I think there are lessons learned after the COVID pandemic. This is a different kind of virus, but there are lessons learned about getting out in front of these situations.
Thank you, Margaret, for this report. For more insight on what the Africa delegation to the United Nations General Assembly is hoping to achieve, I have with me here in our New York bureau, Yetunde Omede, Professor of Global Affairs and Director of the Office of Civic and Community Engagement at State University of New York. And via Zoom from Florida, I'm joined by Dr. James Jonah, former United Nations Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
All right. Let me come to you first, Yetunde. The Africa delegation calls itself 3A+. The plus mean other Caribbean countries wanting to support the push for what the Africa delegation wants. What are your expectations?
I, th- I think my expectations are they're definitely going to push for a permanent, you know, seat on the Security Council. They're going to be looking for increased funding and trying to achieve the sustainable development goals. I think, but for now, I think trying to also speak on some of the security issues that are also ongoing throughout the continent. So I think those are the three main priorities that they're going to be pushing at the UN and also probably in talks with President Biden and so forth.
Dr. Jonah, let me come to you. What are your expectations of the Africa delegation? You know, previously they've talked about their front being divided and their push for reforms not happening. What do you expect from them this time, Dr. Jonah?
Well, I think the African delegations will continue, but they have to reorganize themselves. People must remember that the African states in the United Nations have accomplished much when they are organized. We should remember that it was the African delegations in the 60s that pushed for the Committee of 43 that expedite decolonization in the United Nations. It was the African delegation when they are organized who pushed for the assembly to create the Committee on Apartheid, that pushed and mobilized world opinion and was able to break down the resistance of some of the permanent members of the Security Council. There is nowhere that Africa could have achieved as much about ending colonialism, freeing Namibia, and ending apartheid, and mobilizing the frontline states without the organizing power of the African delegation. The problem is that since the Halcyon Day, the African delegations are laying back and they are not pushing as they did in the 1960s and 1970s.
So Dr. Jonah, let me ask you again before I come to you, Yetunde. Why do you think they are not pushing back or they are not being effective in asking for what they want, backing it up, and getting it?
Well, there are many explanations. Whenever I have lamented the fact that the Africans have turned away from the days when Africa were pushing, they said, well, the times have changed with poverty in the African continent, with the need for economic assistance, and with their increasing dependence on the largesse of developed countries, they are afraid to speak too loud lest they fail to get the aid and assistance they need from the former colonial powers.
So Yetunde, what are your thoughts? The effectiveness is that accusations are that they are not effective, their front is divided, they are not united, they want two permanent seats. Some are suggesting that perhaps they should ask one and follow it up. Mm-hmm. They want two at a go.
Do you see
that happening?
I think it's a good way to sort of move things forward. I think getting one is really the aim, right? I think two is wonderful and it's great. But if you look at the makeup of the General Assembly, right, African countries have 28% of the vote, ahead of Asia, which is 27%. And so now the question is not that they're divided or not united. A lot of the issues that are hitting many of the different countries are vary in nature, right? Some are dealing with famine. Some are dealing with climate issues. Some are dealing with security. Some are dealing with the issues of terrorism. Some are dealing with issues of economic shocks, right? So those issues that are hitting them, every country is looking at what my priority is, right? And are advocating for that and have been advocating for that for a long time. But they realize that as they advocated in 1971 for China to get a permanent seat on Security Council, they realize that in order for us to have that say and to have that permanent seat, they must come together collectively and actually support themselves, right? And have a united front. And I think that this time, we see the difference with President Biden also showing his support. African countries and their delegations have said, well, if you're not going to give us the veto power, so then no one should have the veto power. They may not get that. But I think it should be put into consideration that if we look at the population of the world, right, the continent of Africa is going to have the highest population, the largest population. And so these areas are things they should put into consideration when discussing issues of security, global security. When it comes to issues of global governance, I think Africa needs to be at the table. And they also need to have veto power. They represent a large demographic of the world.
Well, Yetunde, you mentioned when China wanted a seat at the Security Council, you know, Africa lobbied hard for them, supported them. People are asking why Africa is not pushing Asia, since they back them up so strongly in order to get them a seat at the United Nations Security Council, and then veto as well. What's the holdup? I mean, they are the biggest, so far, the biggest trading partner.
Look, they already have their permanent seat, and they already have a large connection and a strong connection when it comes to trading with the African countries. Would it be in their best interest for African countries to be on the Security Council and to have a permanent seat? I think that is something that they have to think about, right? They may be looking at their own best interests instead of the global interest. However, with that being said, I think African countries should still be collective and united in moving forward with their quest of achieving at least one permanent seat on the Security Council with veto power.
It's time for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on Africa's presence at the United Nations General Assembly. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
The summit of the future is a call to action. We must shape our future to protect ourselves and our planet Earth, to save future generations from the pain of war.
Our world is going through a time and turbulence and a period of transition. But we cannot wait for perfect conditions. We must take the first decisive steps towards updating and reforming international cooperation and make it more networked, more fair, and more inclusive now.
Welcome back. We are discussing Africa's presence at the United Nations General Assembly. With me today is Yetunde Omede, Professor of Global Affairs and Director of the Office of Civic and Community Engagement at State University of New York, and Dr. James Jonah, former United Nations Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Dr. Jonah, let me come to you. You know the United Nations inside out. You led the political division for a while. Now, what do you think the African delegation can do, talking about the 3A+, in order to be effective and get what they want?
Well, this is a welcome change in the Security Council. Previously, when Africans gained seats as non-permanent members of the Council, they usually play ball alone. They don't do any effective consultation. But they have learned a lesson. And this time, they have set up a caucus in the Security Council. And they call it A3+. Plus means getting the Guyana delegation to join them in what they are doing. And I can tell you that if they continue in that path, the African delegation in the Security Council can put pressure on the permanent members to change. For example, now there are four, and they are always working together. It is not too difficult for them to recruit another 3 or 4. And if they do, they will have 7 or 8. And they can use that block to force the permanent members to change. Without that pressure, there is no way that all the permanent members could make a change, because they do not want to give up the power that they have. And you must remember, too, that when the Iraq War came and the Security Council blocked President Bush to get his wish, the general sentiment in the United States was, we cannot have a cumbersome Security Council. That is a council that they could not create or mobilize. This is the key.
Well, Dr. Jonah, I'll come back to you shortly. Hold your thought. Yetunde, Dr. Jonah talked about the new strategy that they are deploying. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts is that even if the Security Council wanted to walk in the line of legitimacy, because right now it's a question of legitimacy. Since 1945, those who are making decisions on global governance and those who are around the table with permanent seats are the victors of World War II. Mm-hmm. And if we are going to look at that, okay, where is Africa now? And in our quest for decolonization and in our quest for freedom for African countries, they still do not have a voice on one of the most important councils that have direct impact on what goes on in African countries when it comes to peace, when it comes to security, and so forth. And so I think that this question's of a question of legitimacy. It brings up a question of legitimacy of the Security Council, that are they trying to hold on and maintain the old norms of the past, or are they really open to rural decolonization? Are they really open to democratization of the African continent? If they are, this shouldn't be an issue of even having one permanent seat with veto power, with a continent of 1 billion people by 2050, 2.3 billion people. I think it's a time for change. And if they continue in a collective voice, in a unified voice, hopefully, you know, that change will be sort of reflected in a new permanent seat on the Security Council.
Dr. Jonah, let me come to you again. You talked about the new strategy that the African delegation, or the A3 Plus, is deploying this time. But what else can they do to be more effective? And what would you recommend they do in order to achieve this objective of getting on the UN Security Council and then getting the veto power?
Well, let me explain. Since I was one of the four ambassadors that was approached by some of the permanent members, their interest was not to grant Africa or Asia permanent seats. Grouping us, four of us, the question, will you support two permanent seats for Japan and Germany? Because they said that the Diet in Tokyo and the Bundestag in Germany were getting weary of spending money for the UN and not getting power. Our response to those delegations was, we would have no objection to giving Germany and Japan permanent seats. But what about Africa? What do you want to do about Africa? And I can tell you quite frankly, they were shocked at that response. And that is the origin of the issue of reform. This was 1996. And I really doubt, that despite all the flexibility shown by some permanent members, that we are going to see a change. One permanent member confided in me when we were discussing this. He said, look, we in the executive, said the White House, have no objection. But if we go ahead and have a permanent seat for Africa, Asia, Latin America, they are still that the Senate will not ratify. So this is a dilemma. But this is beyond Africa.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Jonah. So yesterday, let me come to you before you go. The ongoing UN General Assembly is talking about the Pact for the Future. What impact will it have on Africa? Because they're talking about sustainability, the SDGs, they want peace and stability, but Africa faces a lot of challenges. So what impact do you anticipate it having?
I think the Pact for the Future is basically a way for African countries to streamline sustainable development goals. In order to achieve these sustainable development goals, it needs an increase in financing. And they realized that that was one of the reasons that's holding the progression of the achievement of achieving sustainable development goals. So I'm hoping that with the Pact for Future, what it does is that it streamlines and increases more financing for African countries and also provides the mechanisms and the resources that are needed to achieve the SDGs. Without these critical resources or financing, it'll be very difficult for many of the African countries to achieve it.
Thank you very much,
Yetunde. Thank you so much.
And thank you very much, Dr. James Jonah, you former UN Undersecretary General for African Affairs. Well, thank you very much. This is where we'll leave it for today. Thank you for watching Straight Talk Africa. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. Be sure to check out Straight Talk Africa on social media. Like us on Facebook, follow us on X, and watch us on YouTube. And let us know what you think. Good evening, Africa. I'll see you next time.